All right, I've just told you of yet another delay at the Zondo Commission of Inquiry into State Capture yesterday. This was, of course, after the Deputy Chief Justice Raymond Zondo agreed to grant the former Transnet and Eskom Chief Financial Officer Anuj Singh a postponement due to a flaw in the summons that required him to give evidence. The inquiry is, of course, scheduled to complete its work in March, but the clock is ticking. The Commission has now cost upwards of 700 million rand. And it's not clear yet if Jacob Zuma, the former president, will even appear to give his evidence. We are joined now by the portfolio manager for State Capture at OUTA, the organization undoing tax abuse, Rudy Heinecker. Rudy, a very good morning to you. Thank you for your time.
Good morning, Bongani, and thank you for hosting me.
There's no underscoring the importance of the evidence that Anuj Singh, as the former CFO of not only Eskom, but also Transnet, in terms of what he was scheduled to talk about yesterday.
Yes, I think the evidence of Mr. Singh is very, very important. And like the Deputy Chief Justice said yesterday, you know, we cannot think of having this commission of inquiry without hearing Mr. Singh.
Absolutely. And of course, it was OUTA that first laid a complaint with SAICA in September 2017. You wanted him to be struck off the roll. It took a while, 3 years, for that complaint to be concluded. But basically, as matters stand now, Anuj Singh can no longer practice as a chartered accountant.
Yeah, that is correct. And I think, you know, it was the right decision by SAICA as well. It is a pity that also at SAICA, Mr. Singh did not appear and state his case. And that is why it is so important now for him to appear also at the State Capture Commission. He did appear back in 2017 at the inquiry, the parliamentary inquiry.
Yeah.
But it is essential that we hear now what he's got to say with all this new evidence and testimonies that came through in the meantime.
So SAICA, being the South African Institute of Chartered Accountants, found that Anuj Singh was negligent, dishonest, showed a clear lack of accountability. They said he committed serious breaches of the SAICA Code of Conduct, whilst, of course, in important positions at Transnet and Eskom. Let's break that down, shall we? What is he accused of? He was Chief Financial Officer at Eskom from 2015, and he resigned in January 2018. From what you can tell, what went wrong with his tenure there?
Well, Bongani, we have done investigations, lots of investigations into state capture matters. We found, with regards to Mr. Singh, that, small little practical things that I just want to, put out there to the public.
Yeah.
For example, there will be an invoice submitted by companies like McKinsey and Regiments, and especially Regiments, their invoices would be paid within a day or two, signed off by Mr. Singh and approving the payment and say that it must be paid as soon as possible. Now, we all know that that is not in line with the prescripts and policies of the procurement division of the SOEs. So it is him enabling companies like Regiments, for example, to get their money ASAP. And then also, the decisions made, and especially back at Transnet, where Mr. Singh and Mr. Muleka did not play open cards with the board of Transnet at that stage. This is all things that must be exploited. And I think coming back to his appearance at SAICA, or his non-appearance for that matter, is that, you as an investigative journalist know that there's always two sides to a story. And we've heard one side of the story. And to make a good and a thorough and a ruling, you must hear both sides of the story. And that's where, there's legal instruments like summonses, subpoenas, and so forth to get witnesses there so that, in this case, the judge or the chairman of the commission can make a ruling hearing both sides of the story.
Absolutely, and I think there are important things to be answered, whether it relates to the Tegeta purchase of Optimum Mine, for example, as far as Eskom is concerned, the performance guarantees that were pre-approved for the Guptas. You mentioned, of course, Transnet, the locomotive deals. It wasn't just about the speeding of payments. It was also about kickbacks which were arranged. It was contracts that were agreed to. It was about the price of things that were procured ballooning well into billions, and whether or not those orders should have been approved in the first place.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's more than that to explain as well. You will remember right in the beginning of the commission when former Minister Nene said that, you know, he met with the Guptas, and the end of that was that he had to resign because of public pressure. Now, we have submitted to the commission and to the law enforcement agencies proof of Mr. Singh's relationship with the Guptas. You know, going to, especially to Dubai, his relationship also with McKinsey. McKinsey sponsoring for him for seminars and workshops all over the world. And that is something that must be exploited as well, so that one can understand where he fits into the picture of state capture. And we must remember that state capture is not only about, you know, the people doing this and that and the following, but state capture is actually the capturing of state resources that belongs to you and me, the citizens of South Africa. And that's why this commission is so important, and that it must progress with its work.
It's also important to note that there are a number of people who've been implicated. In fact, I think by the end of last year, over 700 individuals had been implicated and issued with notices to present their side of the story at the Commission of Inquiry. And yet we know, even as the clock ticks, right, and time runs out, it's still awaiting some of the biggest names to appear. We still know that the president, the current president, Cyril Ramaphosa, is still scheduled to appear before the commission. We know we still need the former president, Jacob Zuma, to explain some of what he's implicated in. But there are other people, the Minister of Mineral Resources and Energy, Gwede Mandashe, right, who was Secretary General of the ANC at the height of state capture. He's one of the politicians accused of receiving favors from Busasa, for example. Lucky Mundana, the former CEO of the Passenger Rail Agency of South Africa, was scheduled to appear. He has not yet. When it's big names like that, people observing, members of the public, might be tempted to say it probably can't or won't get to the bottom of everything, will it?
Well, I can react to that in the following way. ALTA is part of a group called the State Capture Working Group, and that's 20-plus state cap civil society organizations who came together and said, listen, we want to, you know, assist the commission, we want to support them, and but we also want to be critical and have oversight on behalf of the public. We've provided a list, and we wrote to the commission, and we provided a list of people and entities, companies, and said, listen, to get to the bottom of state capture, you must also listen to these people and, you know, get them before the judge to testify. Now, we had a meeting with the head of investigations, you know, people, individuals of the executive committee of the State Capture Commission, like the head of investigations, Mr. Terence Nombembe, as well as Professor Musala. And they assured us that, you know, like you said, the clock is ticking, and yeah, all the oral evidence will not be heard, and that we know. There's not enough time for that. But they gave us the assurance that all submissions made to the State Capture Commission will be taken into consideration by the Commission before publishing their findings and their recommendations. So we are confident that although the public and we don't see some of these big names appearing there, submissions with regards to them and their answers on that will be for the in front of the judge to make or the chairman to make a finding.
Rudy, I've got to ask you a question. I've been asking my listeners this morning: who got away with it? Who got away with state capture? It's hard to imagine that the Guptas are going to suffer very much for what they were what they're implicated in having done?
Well, an interesting question. I think, like I said just now, it is state capture is more about the capturing and the looting of state resources. And during our investigations, we've seen money that went to different role players, either the Guptas, but also other individuals that received gratification with regards to what happened. There are multiple role players and people that received gratification during state capture. And if it was small, there's one example of a lady that received or they paid 3,000 rand for her to go and buy at Edgar's to buy herself clothes. So that's small gratification, but those are all the people that got away with it. And then obviously there are the bigger ones. I can say with certainty that Transnet paid to regiments more than 1 billion rand, and of that, more than 600 million ended up in the hands of Salim Issa and the Guptas. So they are the bigger, let's say, recipients of looted funds. But there are a lot of individuals, companies as well, that got away with it, that were paid extremely high rates or asked extremely high rates for work that's not... worth the money that was paid to them.
Not to mention, of course, those who received brown envelopes or tailored suits, as is commonly understood. Rudy Heinecker, thank you for your time. He's the portfolio manager for State Capture at OUTA, the organization undoing tax abuse. How does that sit with you, right? We know the State Capture State Capture Commission was never going to get to the bottom of everything. But how does it sit with you that you know some people did get away with it?